You've been sending us questions for several days now, and we appreciate that. We've sorted them into buckets, if you will, so that we can answer them all together. So next, we want to answer all your questions on the virus itself, especially how it relates to your health and our hospitals. Joining us now is Dr. Amesh Adalja. He's an infectious disease specialist from Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health and the Center for Health Security. Dr. Adalja, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
So let's take a listen to our first question.
Hi, my name is Nicole, and I'm from Mattituck, Long Island. And I just wanted to ask why the coronavirus is so bad to have at any age. Why does it have to be such a pandemic? Why can't we just act like we would with the flu, like taking care of ourselves if we get it and stay away from others? Why do we have to have all the social distancing? We don't have to do it for the flu, so why the coronavirus?
Doctor, we've been hearing this a lot. So what do you think?
This isn't just influenza. This is something that is going to have a case fatality ratio that is at least, you know, 5 to 10 times worse than seasonal influenza. There's no population immunity to this virus, so therefore it can attack a large swath of the population. And because of that, there's going to be a huge burden on our hospitals that will be limited in their ICU capacities, limited in the number of mechanical ventilators they have. And that's what the social distancing is about, is trying to buy time for hospitals to be prepared, because this isn't just the flu. This is worse than influenza.
Here's another question we got about young folks hanging out outside.
Hi, my name's Amy Zimmer. I live in Stillwater, Minnesota. My 18-year-old is chomping at the bit to get outside with his friends, and they would like to play Ultimate Frisbee together or soccer. Is that okay? And is the answer different if depending who they're living with? Like, if they're living with someone who's over 60 or is a type 2 diabetic or has a weakened immune system, is that a different answer? And then also, a person who has AFib or a person who has viral-induced asthma, are they considered in the vulnerable category? Are they more vulnerable to the coronavirus?
So thanks for that question. And if you have questions for Dr. Adalja, please go to npr.org/nationalconversation or use the hashtag NPR Conversation on social media. So doctor, you know, what about it? Ultimate Frisbee, soccer?
So certain sports are more conducive to be able to practice social distancing, and there's not any kind of hard and fast rule over what sports are safe, which ones are unsafe. But what we want to do is avoid physical contact as much as possible and trying to keep people 6 feet apart from each other, at least in this acute stage of this virus's outbreak. So Ultimate Frisbee, there may be ways to do that in a safe manner. If people are washing their hands a lot and not touching their face, I wouldn't completely rule that one out. Soccer becomes a little bit harder because there is physical contact between players during soccer, so that might be a little different. Maybe kicking the ball back and forth might be safe, but I think a full soccer game might be a little bit difficult. And it definitely is the issue. If you're living with somebody that maybe is at higher risk for severe complications, you don't want to become an unwitting host to this virus and pass it on to one of those individuals. And regarding asthma, I would say yes, that is a risk factor for severe infection and severe disease and complications. Atrial fibrillation or AFib, the caller mentioned, I don't think in and of itself is a major risk factor, but definitely lung disease and other types of heart diseases.
We know that a lot of people are worried who need to get regular treatment for an illness, an underlying health condition, or something that they've been already dealing with. Let's listen to this question. This listener is worried about taking a family member to the hospital for cancer treatment.
My name is Sean. I'm from Santa Barbara, California. We're worried that going to the hospital every day for a month of treatment seems a little dangerous right now. How should medical patients with ongoing treatments be prepared to handle the next wave of cases? And is going to the hospital safe for those with compromised immune systems?
Doctor?
So this is a very tricky question, and it's one of the problems when you have an infectious disease pandemic, that there are these cascading impacts on other health conditions. And we know that for someone with cancer, chemotherapy is life-saving, and we don't want to interrupt chemotherapy at all, if possible. So what I would do is each hospital kind of has a protocol for how those individuals can get to the hospital safely and get their chemotherapy safely. So I would not delay chemotherapy over this infection. I would talk to the hospital about the best ways to come in, and that may be that you keep those individuals segregated from other individuals and that there are protocols in place, because this is what we don't want to happen. We don't want other health conditions to suffer because of this pandemic. And I'm afraid that that's going to happen to some extent, but hopefully we can minimize it.
And we've talked some today about what it's going to take to get back to normal. But this listener asks, what are the metrics to watch for? Let's listen.
Hi, I'm Chris Haley in Williamsburg, Virginia. What kind of metrics will government and medical professionals use to determine when it's safe to open businesses and schools? Are we looking for a certain level of new cases, a particular death rate, or something else?
And Doctor, before you answer, Joseph in Wisconsin wrote us a question which is similar along those lines. And Joseph asks, how does this end? Unless a vaccination is developed, are we all eventually going to get COVID-19? So what do you say to Chris and Joseph?
I do think that there's going to be a large swath of the population that is infected, because there is no population immunity. And remember, the H1N1 virus infected 20% of the world's population within a year, and there was some immunity in the population. So we can expect the majority of individuals to get this without a vaccine. The question is, what are the metrics that you use to start to bring the world back to life? And that's an open question, and it may have to do with what's going on locally with the virus. How many cases do you have? How much has the population been exposed to this virus? And can you open certain businesses with modifications that will allow social distancing? How are your hospitals doing? What is the hospital capacity? Has there been new capacity added? All of those are important metrics that are going to play a role in how well we can move back from some of this extreme social distancing. But this is a really hard question to answer, and there are no hard and fast rules here, and it's something that's going to really require a dialogue with the community when we do this.
And here's a question that kind of loops back to where we started. Dr. Grace in Florida wrote us and asked, why didn't SARS or MERS spread the way COVID-19 has?
Well, SARS and MERS are both coronaviruses, just like this novel coronavirus. But the thing was about SARS and MERS is that they were viruses that didn't have the ability to spread efficiently between humans. SARS and MERS both came from animals and it went into humans, but didn't really find it very hospitable. And their ability to spread between humans was really limited. We are still having MERS cases, for example, now in the Arabian Peninsula, but they don't really go anywhere because it's just basically going from camels to humans and then stopping. And that's something that this coronavirus hasn't had as an obstacle. It's been able to spread efficiently between human to human, and that's why it's taken off and become a pandemic, and SARS and MERS never did and never could.
Well, thank you so much for your expertise there. That's Dr. Amesh Adalja. He's an infectious disease specialist from Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health and the Center for Health Security. Doctor, thanks so much for joining us today, and especially for making it so that the lay people among us can understand it.
Sure, anytime. Thanks.
And if you have questions about COVID-19, we want to help. Go to npr.org/nationalconversation or ask us on social media using the hashtag NPR Conversation. Much more. Please stay with us.